The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily express those of KCNR Radio and its sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. Readers and listeners are advised that neither KCNR Radio nor its owners and agents shall be held liable for the content of this program.
Hello, my darlings, and welcome back to Radio Wasteland. Happy Labor Day. You are listening to your very own special show about the paranormal and everything spooky and strange and awesome. I'm your host, Chauncey Allworth, and this is my co-host, Sean. Sean,
hello.
How are you doing this week?
Pretty good.
Sean, you seem to be like my yin to my yang of like being a treasure trove of totally pointless knowledge.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm a treasure trove of any knowledge, to be honest.
Pointless knowledge, I think you can confidently say.
Pointless knowledge? Maybe.
Might be a little bit of a oxymoron, but... yeah. So Jared and I are out front before the show starts, and there's some little Boy Scout taking down all the flags.
Of course.
For Labor Day. And they drop one on the ground.
Okay. Now, and so he was shot on sight.
Yeah.
Next anecdote. Solve this one.
So this is one of those American laws I've always been, or not laws, but
customs, you might say.
Like burning the flag is bad, but sure. Aren't you supposed to burn the flag if it's touched the ground, like cremated or something?
You know, of the pointless knowledge that I am a treasure trove of, like the proper handling and care and feeding of the American flag, not really.
The proper feeding, yeah.
I don't know. It is not really in my area of expertise, but I understand that, yes, when... I don't know if you're supposed to burn a flag if it touches the ground, but I think once it's become old and tattered or whatever, you don't keep flying it. You fold it up in some proper way, and then you burn it.
So you do burn the flag.
I believe...
I find that law to be a little confusing. I know it's not a law. I find that custom to be a little confusing.
You know, I'm sure I'm saying exactly the wrong thing here, and I'm going to inspire a bunch of people to go out and burn their flags, and then they won't get into, you know,
I don't
USA
think that's going to be a problem.
Something.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be a problem, you know. But, and just as a reminder to people, it is not a law. It is totally 100% legal to burn
sure.
your flags.
Of course. Because it's the First Amendment and so forth.
That's because we're Americans. Now.
Exactly.
It's definitely frowned upon.
Yeah.
I'm suggesting you don't go do it.
I mean...
And if you drop yours on the ground and it gets all dirty and you decide to lay it to rest...
I think
you might want to research that on the internet and not follow
orders. I think
you're
allowed to, like, launder them, though.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
So,
but I heard, like, it's never supposed
to
touch the ground, you know?
I don't know. Maybe the custom has changed a little bit over the years.
Totally. As with the invention of OxyClean...
Yeah, right.
Now things are different.
Now, okay, so here's the funny thing. We're two people having a conversation, right?
Yeah.
And normally in a conversation at this point, one of us would Google it and just, like, pause for a little while, and there would be this awkward silence. But we
right.
can't do that because we're on the radio.
No, yeah.
So in a way, we're actually considerably less knowledgeable.
That's true.
Than two regular guys just having a conversation.
Right. So our conversation is a lot like dinner with your parents. You're not allowed to Google it.
Oh, but I Google things at dinner with my parents. We
yeah.
all do. No,
oh, okay.
Yeah, it's 2018. We just sit around a table looking at our phones.
Both my parents have passed on, but my dad definitely would not have had that. That'd be a no.
Okay, you know. Well.
But he was old, crotchety.
Exactly.
You know.
So, yeah, this is the paradox of media, I guess. Here we are, and we have the platform, but because of the platform, we can't, strictly speaking, give you accurate or well-researched information.
Right. And so, seeing how it's Labor Day, we're sitting here talking about flags and what you should do with them. And so I have another bit of American news here that I think is kind of interesting. That is that Donald Trump thinks that... Now let's take this out of this.
Sorry, you just said his name.
I know.
It was
chill,
reflex.
Man. Chill.
Okay, I'm chill.
All right,
chill.
Donald Trump thinks that Google is out to get him.
Sure.
And you know,
he is very old.
Do we have enough time for this? Yeah, Jasmine, my daughter was like,
"Kids, quit moving my reading glasses."
Right, Jasmine was reading me something to the effect of like people making fun of her hand generation. And for not being able to do handwriting, and they're just all, oh, yeah, well, Grandma, you can't turn on your laptop without getting 4 viruses and giving all your money to a Nigerian prince.
Oh, no
kidding.
So
it's like, yeah, so Donald Trump thinks that Google's out to get him. I have a day job of doing SEO.
Right, you
search
understand
engine
the internet to the extent that
and
anyone
so,
does.
Personally, I don't think that Google is out to get him.
No.
But it is an interesting conspiracy because it does add to the potential of that side of the New World Order and stuff like that. But but when my kid's asking me in the car, she's just all, so what do you think that means that Donald Trump thinks Google's out to get him? I'm all, well, I think it means he doesn't know how Google works.
Sure.
You know, because it can be swayed because of the popular searches of what people are searching up.
Yeah.
And what people that don't really understand this stuff, including Donald Trump, don't realize is that when somebody in the limelight does something negative,
mm-hmm.
both sides are searching for it by that negative term.
Sure.
That's spiking the search results in that negative term, causing that negative term to show up as number one. You know, so even if you say, you know, Dick Cheney shot that guy in the face, or did Dick Cheney shoot that guy in the face, or Dick Cheney definitely didn't shoot that guy in the face, all of those search terms are going to spike on Dick Cheney, shoot, guy, and face.
Right.
You know, and that's just the way that the internet works. And for those people who think that Google is so aware of their algorithm that they can tell you what's going to come up, they can't. It is just way too complex. It is, for any of you musicians or audio fans out there, let's say I have my guitar and I have distortion and I have reverb and I run through my distortion pedal. It distorts the signal and then I put reverb on it. It's now added echo to my distorted signal. Mm-hmm. If I move those two around, I am now getting an echoed guitar and adding distortion to the echo of the guitar. So by moving the algorithms around, you're creating variations, but Google has so many of these going on that nobody actually knows at Google how it works.
Sure.
And so people don't understand.
So we have the analogy that is perfectly comprehensible to people who are audio nerds.
Right. Yeah, totally. Well, I figure everybody is here, you know.
Oh, well, not me. But
we got our buddy Connor here sitting in.
That's true.
Going to school up there, and he's learning a little bit about this. I bet you some of that audio stuff rang a bell with Connor. See? Target audience.
He's nodding. Okay, he's nodding. Okay.
All
well,
right.
You were right.
Yep.
Well, you know, in fairness to Donald Trump, the concept that Google is conspiring against him did not originate with him.
Yeah, yeah, that's why I didn't want to, you know, come down on Donald Trump, because I'm aware that he's not the first.
Well, it originated on a news program that reported, you know, pretty much without basis, hey, the news is discriminating against Donald Trump, and he kind of picked up that idea and ran with it.
Right.
But,
and
you know, I don't think he did any thinking about, you know, the ins and outs of it. He just repeated what he heard.
Right, and the news is leaning on Donald Trump. I mean, that
sure.
is happening.
Yeah.
I mean, look at OJ. Lots of people, you know, kill people. But OJ was all over the place. Why? Because people were interested.
That is true.
All right, so that's enough politics.
Yeah. It's hard to avoid because we talk about conspiracies and,
well, I mean, they tend to tie into the real world.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, so maybe there is a grand conspiracy.
Exactly.
You know, but unfortunately, I think the conspiracy here is money and sensationalism.
Isn't that true?
So tonight, our guest, Richard Van Steenberg, Humanoid Aliens Live Among Us. Here on Radio Wasteland, so come on back.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that with proper care and just a little discipline should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert. Like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
Some things in life you can just rely on, like the perfect fit of your favorite pair of jeans, the nap-inducing powers of your trusty recliner, and the tried and true performance of a new Rood home heating system. So here's to reliability, built into everything we do. Rely on Rood.
Get reliable comfort when the weather turns cold with a new heating system installed by the local pros at Alliance Heating and Air. Call Alliance today, 530-221-2642. At Alliance Heating and Air, everybody calls us.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kara Tennant with CARE Animal Hospital, and I'm inviting you to join me on the Carl and Linda Morning Show. We will be discussing all of Reading's local pet needs and how to keep your pet happy, healthy, and safe. CARE Animal Hospital is a local veterinary clinic located on the corner of Hilltop Drive and Lake Boulevard. Make sure your best friend has the best possible care today.
Join Dr. Kara Tennant the third Friday of each month in the 8 a.m. hour here on locally owned KCNR.
Hey, you getting hungry?
Yeah, hungry as a bear.
Oh, yes, the eternal question. What's for lunch?
Fast food?
Nah, I want something that didn't come in a bag.
Someplace fancy.
No, I want a place that has a down-home atmosphere, serves good portions, and has consistently good food.
My friend, you just described Black Bear Diner. They started just up the road in Mount Shasta. They have carried that feeling of home-cooked meals at a great price to more than 100 locations.
They're on Hilltop Drive in Reading. What's that?
It's time to feed the inner bear.
Black Bear Diner.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? Every week, there's a new chapter. To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program, Sunday morning at 9 a.m. on KCNR 1460 AM, with your hosts, Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Richard Van Steenberg, and we are talking about humanoid aliens live among us. Richard, do you have you there with us?
Yeah, I'm right here.
All right, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I am doing pretty good. Being that it's Labor Day, I'm enjoying some laborless day. I've got to start with the typical question, and that is, you know, how'd you get started in this? You know, what brought you from the daily life of the average Joe to really sort of understanding that humanoid aliens are living among us? You know, where did this transition happen for you?
So for me, I definitely didn't take your traditional route that most people seem to have gone down. Basically, I wasn't interested in ET and I wasn't interested in UFOs. But what happened to me was I was really interested in air combat, and I would talk to a lot of the fighter weapons instructor pilots about how they would do air combat against, you know, Soviet aircraft and enemy fighters. And as I would talk to them, you know, occasionally I would kind of throw the question out to them, well, what would you do if you ran into a UFO? And they would basically just sit there and they wouldn't comment on it. And I thought it was kind of bizarre because they would spend all this time talking about fighting enemy aircraft. And then when I would bring up a topic about something that didn't seem to me that it would be an enemy, they wouldn't comment on it. So I thought that was kind of bizarre. And then I have a pretty high level understanding of air combat. So some of the other things that seemed bizarre to me is I would ask them if you studied the history of fighter combat, fighter pilots like to fly in a two-ship standard operating procedure so they can provide mutual support for each other, and then they'll expand that out to a four-ship, but they don't like to be operating in a three-ship formation because they can't provide mutual support for each other. And when I would ask them, you know, why don't you fly in three-ship formations, they said it's not possible. And I thought that was kind of bizarre, too. And then another thing I noticed about them is I would see pictures of these same guys that I would meet in magazines and stuff. They would have their hands positioned on their hips, making – I couldn't tell at the time what it was, but it was clear they were making some sort of hand gesture. Well, so over time I started theorizing that if extraterrestrial pilots were, you know, better than Earthling pilots, and if some of them were in a humanoid form – they could come down to Earth and walk among us, and we wouldn't know, you know, we think they're Earthlings, and the first place they would want to end up is at the fighter weapons school where the best pilots are, because they would be better than our pilots. So then another thing that started catching my attention is I ran across a picture of three UFOs in a formation one day, and I started thinking, I wonder if the extraterrestrial pilots understand how to fly in these three-ship formations that the Earthlings don't natively understand how to fly in, you know, and they're just a more adept pilot with better fighting tactics. And so I started, you know, theorizing how they would fight in the three-ship formation and be able to provide mutual support for each other. And then as I continued to look at people in pictures, I started noticing more and more people, not only in the fighter community, but also just in public, in the government and in celebrities and all these people, even throughout history and paintings and drawings, and they're all making the same hand gesture. And as I looked at it more and more, I started to come to the conclusion that what they're doing is they're making the letter E, which stands for ET, and they're basically leaving clues all throughout history that they've been here living among us. So for me, without even really understanding what ET and UFO were, I was already into one, humanoid extraterrestrials that have been living among us the whole time. And I was also realizing that when the UFO community, they basically just take this term UFO, which Edward Rupelke and the Air Force gave us, and they basically say that a UFO is an extraterrestrial spacecraft. Well, if you really understand a lot about flying, it's not possible to fly in outer space. Technically, a wing doesn't provide lift up there, so you're using thrust vectoring or some other type of maneuvering and propulsion system. So I started to realize that the term UFO doesn't even accurately describe an extraterrestrial spacecraft because it wouldn't be flying. So as you know, I'm getting out of college back in the 80s, I'm already on a completely different track with HET, humanoid extraterrestrial, and CTV, celestial tactical vehicles. And I had to actually start going back and studying where did all these people in this ET and UFO community start coming up with all this information and what are they describing and stuff like that. So right from the beginning, I had a completely different perspective than everybody else that's describing what's going on.
So, you know, you're talking about all this interaction and them, you know, flying and their humanoid aliens live among us. Do they look just like us?
Yeah, I would say that millions of the most famous people on the planet are not from Earth. And it's been going on all throughout history, ever since the cavemen, they've been living among us.
Right, but do they, are they, you know, at the risk of getting all sci-fi channel or something, are they, like, wearing human skin or covering up somehow, or do they actually just look like us?
No, okay, well, so the analogy that I try and when people want to understand what's going on is if you look at the ocean, there's a myriad of life forms in the ocean. I mean, just almost an infinite number. Well, if you look in outer space, basically what you're going to find is a very similar scenario, kind of like the bar scene in Star Wars where there's just a myriad of different life forms out there. Well, one of the life forms is a humanoid form. Well, so the mistake that the Earthlings are making is that we keep thinking that E.T. is, and he does probably appear in this 3-foot-tall, maybe a green guy with almond-shaped eyes or whatever, you know, this thing you would clearly be able to identify instantly. What the Earthlings aren't realizing is that some of the extraterrestrial beings out there are in humanoid form, and they look just like an Earthling. It's just a humanoid being. So what they don't realize is that when one of those beings comes down to Earth, they can walk among us, and we just think they're an earthling. They look identical. You could marry one and spend your whole life living one and have a child with it and just think you've married an earthling the whole time. They're, except for the fact that they have other abilities, like maybe they could do mental telepathy, and they would also know how to get access to these vehicles to transit star systems back and forth and whatever other capabilities extraterrestrials have, the humanoid form, without them disclosing what they're doing, you just think it's an earthling.
I see.
So I would say most people on Earth have met these people in their lifetime and don't realize it. There's, like, I use an analogy of if the Earth is an airplane, you know, just to compare it, mm-hmm. on an airplane, the FAA makes you have one flight attendant for every 50 people. So if you have 7 billion people on Earth, using that type of a ratio, because they would have to control the planet and be able to have enough of them down here to keep things functional, there would be more than 10 million, potentially 50 million of them living down here. They'd be in all the different countries, all the different governments, militaries. They'd be all throughout Hollywood, all the business sectors. And the other thing is that because they would come from other planetary systems, they would have access to basically all the technology, where the future's going. They would be the smartest. They would be the most capable. They would know how the Earth is going to evolve. So they would be able to position themselves throughout history to make sure that they're the people. So an easy way is to go back and look at dead people. Like I would say people like Newton, Christopher Columbus, Ben Franklin. Anytime you can pull a name out of a person who's an extremely prominent figure, there's a high probability that that person was a humanoid extraterrestrial living among us, controlling the events on Earth to get Earth to evolve the way that they wanted to evolve.
So is there telling through autopsy or anything like that, or we're talking like it's straight up looks like a human?
Okay. Well, so, I mean, I don't get into if you took one of their bodies in terms of technical internal detail as to what would differentiate a humanoid extraterrestrial from a humanoid earthling. What I basically focus on is, like a lot of people, when I bring this up, the first thing they do is they go, tell me for sure who one humanoid extraterrestrial is. And I go, you can't, because they're not going to corroborate it. They won't admit that they're down here doing what they're doing. So instead of trying to pick out one of them, the trick is to step back and look at the whole picture of Earth and understand the strategy of what they're doing and what it is that they're trying to accomplish. And when you see that, you can begin to see who some of the people might be that are these. For example, I use the statement that they're basically at war with us, but they don't fight war the way that we do. They want to control the technology of the planet, and they want to control the way the money flows into the organizations they want. So one of their key things they use is the concept of war. It's like a tool. So all throughout history, all the earthlings think that we're fighting wars among ourselves. What's really happening is that the humanoid extraterrestrials are tricking us into fighting all these wars so that they can control the technology that develops from the war. Then when the war ends, they start another one so they can move on to the next phase, and this has just been going on throughout history. And they even leave clues on the planet so that you can go back in history and see that they're here, because when they disclose to us that they're here, the earthlings aren't going to want to believe it because it's so bizarre. And they can't imagine that they lived their whole lives and weren't able to figure it out. So in order to reveal to the earthlings that they've been down here the whole time, they've been leaving clues the whole time. And once you know that, you can start going around the planet and you can see the clues. So, for example, if you look at the two times that the United States has been attacked, Pearl Harbor and 9/11. So Pearl Harbor was December 7th. December is the 12th month of the year, and on the 7th day, 12 minus 7 is 5. The fifth letter of the alphabet is E. So if you were going to then leave a message, you would want to put a message that would also have the letter T with the next major war when we're being attacked. So 9/11, 9 plus 11 is 20. The 20th letter of the alphabet is T. So people hear that, like, there's no way they're going to do something that simple and put it right smack dab in front of our face. I'm like, yeah, they are. It's that easy for them to do it, and the earthlings simply don't want to believe it because they can't envision something so large happening right in front of them.
Richard,
and yet once you...
we're coming up on the commercial break. When we come back, I really want to kind of dig into what their intention is, because that's always been one of my biggest questions. You're listening to Radio Wasteland here with Richard Van Steenberg. Come on back.
The annual Orchard Nutrition Center Health Fair is coming Saturday, September 8th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Don't miss your chance to enjoy lots of free samples of health-related items. There'll be a smart chicken hot dog barbecue. Be sure to bring the kids for the kitty carnival and great live music from Jimmy Limo. Find out about organic produce, organic groceries, vitamins and supplements, and so much more. And the event is absolutely free. The Orchard Nutrition Center Health Fair, Saturday, September 8th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at 221 Locust Street in Reading.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Commons Senior Living. I thought it would be fun to have you hear from some of our residents what life is like here at River Commons. I asked Jean, Rosalie, Gordon, and Sherry to share their thoughts.
Living here at River Commons is something I never even imagined or dreamed of. It's sort of like being on a vacation where you don't have to worry about doing anything and you have people taking care of you, looking out for you. The food is like being on a cruise ship, as my daughter puts it.
Home. It feels homey to me. Only better. I don't have to cook. I don't have to clean.
Been here 8 years. It's been fantastic. I've enjoyed every minute of it.
This is my home. The parties and the activities are great. I love living here. I wouldn't live anyplace else.
Call today and schedule a tour or luncheon a tour and see for yourself why our residents love living here at River Commons. Call 221-2121 or on the web at river-commons.com.
Analog living in a digital world. Every week on Boomer Tech Radio, we offer up the latest tech news you could use. Hi, it's Bob Belongi. It's even easier to listen to the show now that we're on iTunes. You'll find our archives and articles at BoomerTechRadio.com, and the show is streamed live at KCNR1460.com. We review the latest goodies, gadgets, and gizmos, and make sure you are up to date on the latest tech trend. Boomer Tech Radio, Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. on KCNR1460, and now available as a podcast on iTunes.
It's the Shasta County Mini Maker Fair. It's the open call for makers. So, what do you make? We're celebrating engineering, arts, crafts, science, technology, and do-it-yourself. Your chance to show off your work. Everything from robotics, electronics, gaming, sewing, blacksmithing, crafters, student projects, dance performers, 3D printing, music, performers, and much more. Application deadline is August 9th for the September 15th Maker Fair. Contact makers at makerfairshasta.com or visit shastacounty.makerfair.com.
Have you found yourself stranded with a dead battery and need a jump? Instead of calling that expensive tow truck, call Redding Yellow Cab, and they'll do it for only $20. Running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every day of the year, Redding Yellow Cab will cater to the needs of your parents, seniors, or children who need to travel throughout the city and county no matter the hour. Call Redding Yellow Cab, and they'll do your shopping, give rides to the hospital, airport, hotel, and many other destinations. Call them at 222-1234.
Alan Gordon here with Coachmaster Collision Repair. That's correct. As a new owner of Coachmaster, I'd like to thank Don Speck for his long commitment and dedication to the automotive collision business. For over 50 years, Coachmaster has been offering the highest standard in auto collision repair. If you've had a vehicle repaired by Coachmaster in the last 20 years, then we've already met. Coachmaster will continue to offer the same personal service, quality-driven technicians, and pride in every job we do. We'll miss Don as an instructor at Shasta College, his public service, and many entertaining commercials over the years.
Coachmaster Collision Repair continues to be the leader in the North State for advanced technology in the collision repair industry. From laser and 3D frame alignment machines and computerized paint matching technology to qualified technicians working on your vehicle. Remember Coachmaster on Eastside Road in Reading.
And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Richard Van Steenberg. We are talking about humanoid aliens living here among us. Richard, you know, every time we have a guest on that's talking about aliens or UFOs, you know, which is common. It's a huge topic, of course. My biggest question that I always am really wanting a good answer from, and I understand a lot of people don't have a good answer because, like in your case, you're a researcher, you're putting this stuff together, you know. You may not have a straight answer, but what is their intention? You know, why would they even come here? It seems like in your case, they're like manipulating us for control of natural resources, maybe, or something. What do you think the intention is?
Well, so there's, I definitely have a theory as to what they're doing. And the hard part for people to understand is most people, when they think of things, they think of, oh, it's Labor Day weekend, I just had a nice weekend, I got to go to work tomorrow. You know, so they're a couple days in the past, they're thinking about today and what they're going to do tomorrow, this like 72-hour window. To comprehend ET and their plan and what they're doing, you have to be able to take your mind back before Earth existed. So that's more than, 4.5 billion years. And you have to understand that there's life going on in outer space. These beings have the ability to create star systems and planets the way that we create housing developments. And they move to the new ones when the other ones die or when their systems expand. And they live in a completely different format than we do, in the sense that when they die, they don't die, just their bodies die, so they can put themselves in new bodies and continue to live on. So that's normal. What we see happening on Earth with people dying is not normal. It's the rare percent that they've told us this is what's happening, so we believe it. We don't realize there's more to life than what's going on. Well, so what they do in this rare case, because normally when they create a star system or a planet and they move to it, everyone on it knows what's going on. In our particular case, they've created a planet. They've essentially, I guess you could say, orphaned us, in the sense that, they created us, so we're from them, but they're not allowing us to take part in their system. They put us down here. They're at war with us, although they're not fighting war the way we do, and they're enslaving us. And so they planned all this before Earth existed. The plan is in play every day as it keeps going forward. And the plan is going to continue to go on even after they disclose to us that they're here. And so what we're going to see once we get disclosure is that there's life on all these other planetary systems with all these other beings all over the place, and they have a hierarchical structure similar to the way, there's poor people and wealthy people and all this other stuff. And the Earthling is a lower level being, in the sense that we're treated or mistreated and being used as slaves for their advantage.
So, but of course, currency doesn't represent anything to them, American or world currency. So is it natural resources? Is it like gold? Is it rare earth elements?
Well, they would create the currencies down here to use it to manipulate us. But I would say that, so the average person looks at the planet and looks at the resources on the planet and how they would be using the Earthlings to manipulate those resources. I would say the single most valuable resource on the planet is a human being themselves. And so, for example, you know how people always wonder, why are the pyramids down here? If you study the history of pyramids and you go back to the gold rush in California back in the 1800s, I think around that era, when a person would find a mine, the way that they would mark that mine, and it was called Mexican claim law at the time, is the person would put a little 3-foot-tall pyramid towards the entrance of the mine, and that would be the sign that that person owned the mine. So if you just take that basic analogy of something we've been doing on our own planet, the reason the extraterrestrials would be putting those pyramids on our planet is to show the planetary identification markers of their star systems to show, hey, we own this planet and we're mining the Earthlings as slaves. And so the problem is that most people who are Earthlings don't think like that. They think of, well, are they taking gold? Are they taking, what mineral could they possibly want to get from this planet that has value? They can create all the minerals. They don't need those. They have ways of getting things that we have down here easily. The single most valuable thing is, if you go back to my theory, that from the first caveman, you've got 20 trillion beings approximately that have been on this planet, and those beings would all be alive on other planetary systems, and they would be continuing to use them as slaves out in the interstellar intergalactic systems. And so when I talk about, you have to be able to look back before Earth existed and see them planning this, what I call like an extraterrestrial architecture out, it's taking place on a day-by-day basis. And when they give us disclosure and we look forward into the future, that's just the plan continuing to go on, and they're going to be using us as slaves in an intergalactic or interstellar level, but at a higher intellectual level. And if you go back at Earth and you look at, remember when we had the slaves in, I think, like the 1800s, and we freed them because the cotton gin could pick cotton faster than the slaves could, and so they all of a sudden became, they weren't valuable anymore, and we needed to free them to make them useful in society?
Yeah, I know that was a factor.
We need the same analogy on Earth, where the computer is basically going to be able to think faster than people, and so the people aren't going to be able to perform at the level that the extraterrestrials need us. So they need to raise our intellectual awareness level by informing us what's really going on. So in the sense, they'll probably be telling us we're free, but in reality, we're going to be slaves, but at a higher intellectual level. So if you go back to those people in the 1800s, they thought they were being freed. Well, they were free relative to, you know, being in the United States, they're free, but they're still an extraterrestrial slave on the planet. They're just not aware of it. And so that's what's happening to us. You can look at Earth as like a mirror image of what's going on out in outer space and use examples of the events on the planet to prepare us for what's going on in the future. The problem is that most people find that because we've been raised in a society where we're not told the truth, so our minds aren't prepared for it, and we're not used to thinking in concepts like, oh, 5 billion years before Earth, 5 billion years after Earth, people living among us are from other planetary systems. These are a lot of concepts that are foreign to most people, and you know, try and run it by them. It's just like, wow, you know, that's just too much. I can't believe it.
To be fair, it is totally mind-blowing. You know, I think about this with the government, like I'm supposed to understand about, you know, global nuclear weapons and the economy and all this stuff, yet if my car breaks down, I'm supposed to hire a mechanic because I have a job and kids. You know, it's confusing and it's overwhelming. And, you know, I'm even outside of the alien possibility, it is definitely something that I'm sure governments do to manipulate people in order to have them work. So are any of these aliens on our side, or are we really just the sort of we're the sheep in this deal?
Well, that would be my opinion. I mean, I talk to a lot of people, and I think part of the problem I think Earthlings have is that I come up with this term, human nature fallacy syndrome, where the average person, they want to hear good news. That I'm, for whatever reason, I'm the opposite. I look for the worst case scenario first. I want to prepare for that because if I'm wrong and it's a good scenario, it's easy to recover from it. Whereas if you prepare for a good scenario and you're wrong and it's a worst case scenario and you didn't prepare for that, it's extremely difficult to recover.
Hope for the best and prepare for the worst.
Pardon me?
Hope for the best and prepare for the worst.
Yeah, and so most people, what they do is they hope for the best, they prepare for the best. A lot of people that I talk to about the ET phenomenon are like, oh, there's a lot of benevolent ETs that are trying to help us. And my point is that if that was true, one, this never would have happened. Two, they would have stopped it because no good ET is going to allow this to take place. And so in my theory, basically what it is, there's good ETs and there's bad ETs, just like there's good people on Earth and there's bad people. The problem is that the bad ones are the ones that have the power. And in the end, you may be right, but it doesn't matter if you're right. It's the guy who has the power who's right simply because he has the power and they can invoke whatever they want to have happen. So to me, part of the reason why I put that whole petition together and I'm trying to get people, you know, to be aware of what's going on is that there are things just don't really understand how to function as a group. They don't understand that the extraterrestrials have this ability. They can operate without being in uniform and still be in or out of the military, in or out of the government. They're very dynamic. They're smart. They understand how to operate as a group. The single thing that Earthlings are just failing to do is, and another perfect example is we identify ourselves nationally. We don't identify ourselves planetally in the sense that you and I say we're American citizens. Other people say, hey, I'm Russian, I'm Chinese. The reality is we're all on the same planet. We're all Earthlings, but the Earthlings don't identify themselves as Earthlings. So to me, the people on Earth have a couple basic things. If they would go around and start identifying themselves as Earthlings.
Well, hang on a second there, Richard. Hang on a second. We're coming up on our last commercial break here. And when we come back, I would like to run over the things that maybe we can do, like you're saying here, to really sort of understand this and do something about it. You're listening to Richard Van Steenburgh here on Radio Wasteland. Come on back.
The annual Reading East Rotary Ducky Derby is coming September 30th at Reading's Codwell Park. Be a part of the Reading East Rotary's effort to keep our kids drug and alcohol free. First prize is a 16-sleeper houseboat vacation from Shasta Marina, valued at $2,700. Details on all the other amazing prizes, sponsor, or ticket information, go to readingduckyderby.com or call 225-8583. The 29th Annual Ducky Derby, September 30th in Codwell Park. Get your tickets today. Brought to you by KCNR 1460 AM.
Hi, this is Sharon Clark, owner of Home Helpers. Join me at 9 a.m. every Wednesday for Generations Talk Radio, right here on KCNR 1460. Topics will include resources and businesses that you need to know about. We will talk money, travel, healthcare, and more. Embrace aging. Listen to Generations Talk Radio, Wednesdays at 9 a.m. here on KCNR 1460. Archive shows at generationstalkradio.com.
Shasta Regional Medical Center is located in the heart of downtown Reading and was the recipient of the 2017 HealthGrades Patient Safety and Excellence Award. Our hospital is committed to always providing exceptional care and performance as a certified chest pain center, certified primary stroke center, and most recently earning the Joint Commission's Gold Seal of Approval for hip and knee replacement. When it comes to quality, compassion, and community, Shasta Regional Medical Center is the community choice.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
I'm here with Mike of Estate Granite and Things. Hey, Mike, so I gotta ask, what's with the and things?
And things is anything that we can make with granite and metal.
So you're saying it's gonna last?
It's forever furniture.
Wow, did you come up with that one?
Absolutely. The and things are dining room tables, wine bistros, fire pit patio tables, and our ever-popular granite line roasters. Really, anything you can imagine inside or out.
You know, that store-bought stuff has to be replaced every few years. You know, it gets hot up here.
That's why we call it Forever Furniture. You can will it to your children.
Mike, with Estate Granite and Things, our builder of choice, thinking completely out of the box.
The first time I walked into my new kitchen, I was amazed. But after, I started to notice all the little things that make my kitchen unique. From the tile backsplash to the seams in the granite, everything was truly a work of art.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite and Things. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard. Estate Granite and Things, completely out of the box. Or visit us at estategranite.com.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Richard Van Steenberg. We are talking about humanoid aliens living among us. Is it true? We're finding out right now. You know, Richard, so this being the case, what exactly can we do about it? What would your suggestion to the audience be, to people be, to really sort of take control and get out of this situation?
Well, so there's, from the individual perspective, basically what people are doing that's not correct. There's a narrative going around on the planet, and everyone's got their own opinion as to what's taking place. And the reality is that the Earthlings need to take control of the narrative, and primarily the civilian sector, not the military or government, the people who are the civilians. So the first thing they need to do is they need to start describing themselves or identifying themselves as Earthlings instead of focusing on saying, hey, I'm an American, or I'm a Chinese, or a Russian, or whatever country they originate from. We're all on the same planet. We're all on the same team. The next thing they need to do is they need to, the terms ET and UFO, whereas they were helping us 10, 20, 30 years ago, they're actually holding us back now. What we need to do is we need to elevate the conversation to the term HET, or humanoid extraterrestrial, because of all the types and species out there, the only one that can walk among us that we can't identify is the HET. So if people would start bringing that into the narrative and discussing it each day, they would be elevating the conversation level at a higher level than what the government's speaking at. And then the third thing is that they need to realize that these vehicles that they're calling UFOs, the extraterrestrial spacecraft, don't fly. They can get into all the other more technical things that they're doing, like vectored levitation and all such stuff. But the key is that if the Earthlings would focus more on trying to understand what flying is and what flying isn't, and stop using the term UFO, not completely, but be more aware of the possibility that these vehicles aren't flying, and when everyone just runs around going, oh, it's UFO, it's UFO, we basically haven't moved one step forward from Roswell in the sense that by using that term, it's not allowing us to comprehend what's going on. And most people you talk to will sit there and go, oh, it's just semantics. It's just you're being too pedantic. You're being too critical. Well, if you look at all the other things we've accomplished, like hovering and rocketing and thrust vectoring, other types of maneuvering in the atmosphere and in outer space, no one has any problem with any of those. But as soon as you tell them they have to give up the term UFO, they can't take it because there's a whole industry. You can make money on it. Everyone's comfortable saying that UFO, you know, basically means extraterrestrial spacecraft. And the reality of extraterrestrials are they're technical. They're more complex. The more it requires a better understanding of what's going on. And to really understand, you have to be able to use the right terminology and the right concept. So those are the three things. One, identifying ourselves as Earthlings, bringing the term HET for humanoid extraterrestrial into the mix instead of just ET. And then, like I use CTV for celestial TAC-1 vehicle because celestial means they're from the celestial realm, which is anywhere in outer space. They don't have to pin it down to anywhere. TAC-1 is the speed of light, which most people aren't even aware of. Like they're familiar with Mach-1 being the speed of sound, but they don't even realize there's a term for the speed of light. And then it's a vehicle, so you've got another three-digit or three-letter acronym that you could replace it with. And another thing that people don't realize is that they want to be so accurate in the sense that they just want to call it a UFO so they don't make a mistake. There's this thing I have that's called the rule of one in the sense that if you're sitting there saying that extraterrestrials exist, and HET are among us on Earth, and that they're called CTVs, you could be wrong every single time, and as long as you just get one right one time. So, for example, if everything that was moving by in the sky went by and I called it a CTV, you could sit there and tell me each time you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. Eventually, on one of them, I'm going to be right. And once I'm right forever. But the people who are telling me I'm wrong, they have to be correct every single time forever. So the statistical probability of picking the side of saying that this isn't happening, that this isn't the right terminology, basically the odds are way in the favor of the person who's, you know, trying to use the right terminology and the right concept, because eventually it's like taking a test. All you have to do is get one answer correct and you pass the test. Everyone else has to get 100% on the test forever.
Well, let's say the time comes that we are all aware and that, you know, what does that fight look like? Or is that even a fight? What will our awareness really get us?
Well, I mean, then again, this gets into theory, in my opinion, what's taking place. I think that, one, I don't think they want to come down here. Like a lot of people say, oh, they're going to come down here and slaughter us and obliterate the place and stuff like that. I don't think they want to do that because that's going to create mass chaos and panic. They have to do what I call flipping the planet, which means I think it's going to happen on a Tuesday because between Tuesday to Thursday, you get 3 days in the middle of the week where the most information can be transmitted the fastest because everyone's at work and everything's moving, whereas if you try and do it on a Friday to a Monday, the place slows down. A lot of people aren't at their key positions to transmit information back and forth. But they need to get the planet to be aware that extraterrestrials exist, that humanoid extraterrestrials have been living among us on the planet, that to whatever degree they're going to describe war and slavery and what's going on in outer space. They need to do it quickly, and they need to get the people to accept it and move forward. Otherwise, they're going to run into a problem where they've created this scenario, and they did not maneuver it into position correctly and didn't transition it fast. It's sort of like an airplane going down the runway. There's a key moment when that airplane has to pick the nose up off the ground and start climbing away from the runway. Otherwise, it's going to run into a whole other series of problems because it's still on the ground and now it's maneuvering too fast. They have to transition the planet through this disclosure phase quickly, and they've got to make it happen properly. If they have to come down here and start killing people in public in broad daylight, they're going to have mass chaos and panic and revolt on their hands, and nobody's going to listen to anything. They need to be able to have an intellectual dialogue take place on the planet and get the people to understand what's taking place. and remain calm and try and realize the best thing you can do is pay attention and learn, because that's going to give you the best chance going forward at dealing with what's happening. So, you know, my opinion, people who are more aware will see disclosure as it approaches, because they'll be able to get a sense for the signs that are happening. I mean, you can kind of even get a sense right now. Like, you look at that, the F-18 tic-tac UFO sighting with that Commander Fravor off the Nimitz carrier. That's the first time a UFO sighting has carried mainstream, you know, you can see on Fox, CNN. Normally when people would see a UFO, they would just laugh at it and go, oh, a crazy person's trying to report this. They don't even talk about it. So you can see how they're bringing this stuff into the mainstream and making it more credible and making it more desirable for the public to be able to talk about it without being seen as, you know, fringe elements of society that don't know what they're talking about. And I think you're going to see more and more of that if they're going to try and make it become more mainstream, because they need disclosure to take place rapidly, and it needs to be in a controlled, calm environment. If it gets careens out of control, their whole plan that they've spent all these billions of years working on basically is going to fall apart right in front of them.
Well, Richard, we're coming up here at the end of the show, and I want to give you a chance to tell our audience a little bit about, you know, where they can find out more about you, about this petition, and, you know, where they can get more information about you and your message.
So the main thing is the petition's at extraterrestrialdisclosurepetition.com. It's just all one word, just like it sounds, extraterrestrialdisclosurepetition.com. And then I also have a website, etufodisclosure.com, where you can go and read articles I write about it, talk about it. You can contact me. You know, I'm here to answer any questions people have. Most people find it difficult to pick up on at first. It's this, the way that I'm trying to explain it, unfortunately, it's not a simple, easy thing, even though it's down to, I've tried to take it down to just two acronyms, ATT and CPV. But if you really want to understand, you've got to be willing to put the time and the effort in to learn about what's going on. But if people are interested, I'm more than willing here to help. There's no cost involved. You know, to me, when I was trying to learn back in the 80s, there was nobody there to help me. I had to figure this whole thing out by myself, and I so dearly wanted somebody just to sit there and provide some light to take me in the right direction. So the main reason I do it is simply just for those people who really want to understand what's going on and are willing to spend the time and effort. They've got someone they can ask questions to and at least offer them, you know, my opinion and my theory as to what I think's going on.
All right, Richard. Well, we've really enjoyed having you on the show. You've been listening to Richard Van Steenburgh here on Radio Wasteland, talking about humanoid aliens living among us. Come on back next time.
Sunshine came softly through my window today. Could have tripped out easy, but I've changed my ways. It'll take time, I know it, but in a while you're gonna be mine, I know it. We're doing it in style, 'cause I made my mind up, you're going to be mine. I'll tell you right now.
The news is brought to you on KCNR, Shasta, Redding, by Tobacco and Brew.
Come see their newly remodeled store at 2143 Hilltop Drive in Reading. Tobacco and Brew, open 7 days a week.